discussing these matters, and in discussing the Persian Wars, about which more in detail in a moment, Herodotus celebrates Greek self-consciousness, which is something that it's not clear had existed before his time, or certainly before the time of the Persian Wars, in anything like the form which Herodotus gives it. And this will bear some examination. What does Greek self-consciousness have to do with us? More than one might suppose. Before Herodotus's time, the Greek language itself suggests that the Greeks had regarded those who did not speak Greek as distinctly lesser and distinctly other. Their word for those others was the barbaroi, the barbarians. And it's a taunt. It's the people whose speech, rather than being sensible, like any sensible person who speaks Greek, their speech is like the barking of a dog. Ba, 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 ba. It's the people who go ba, ba, ba. Well, this is not a very sympathetic attitude. And Herodotus continues to refer to non-Greek speakers as barbarians, but he's interested in the barbarians, and he's interested in coming to understand their world insofar as he can on his own terms. That anthropological, that multicultural attitude is the foundation of its happy analogs in the present day, but so too is his sense of Greek self-consciousness. There never was, up until the Greeks were conquered by Alexander, and later by Rome, anything resembling a Greece that contained all Greek-speaking people. Instead, Greece was divided into a series of dozens, if not hundreds, of often, indeed generally, mutually hostile city-states. Poleis, as they were called. The Polis, Athens, Sparta, Corinth, Thebes, Argos, to name some of the larger and more significant of them. They were fiercely proud of their local culture, acutely conscious of their differences, and only, it seems, under strong pressure from Persia, did at least some of them unite to resist Persia, and in the process come to recognize the bonds that united them as Hellenes, to use their word for it, as fellow Greeks. Chief among those was that they regarded themselves, in distinction to the Persians, all of whom, at least in Greek eyes, all of whom, every one, as nominally slaves of the great king, Xerxes or Darius or Cyrus, whomever. They called the Basileus, the great king. Not so in Greece. There were a few Greek monarchies, not many by this time. There were lots and lots of Greek oligarchies, rules of the few, rules of essentially the upper middle class and up in each city, which is pretty much the Greek norm. There was even the Athenian democracy, which had been founded just about the year 500, and was democratic in one sense to a degree vastly surpassing anything that we're used to, and in another sense vastly less democratic, vastly more democratic in that positions were allocated, except for the position of general, by lot among citizens, by lot, at random. And all legislation was submitted to majority vote by the citizen body as a whole, less democratic in that women were excluded, slaves were excluded, and there were lots and lots of slaves in Athens, and foreigners were excluded. So in one sense, a narrower franchise, but in another sense, vastly more democratic than our own democracy. No matter. People who lived in an oligarchic society in Greece, people who lived in a democratic society, imagined themselves to be free men.